Pete Rose, baseball's career hits leader and fallen idol who undermined historic achievements and Hall of Fame dreams by gambling on the game he loved, reading from the New York Times, and once embodied, has died. He was 83. Let me ask you this. The first thing you think about when you hear his name over the years.
Gambling.
The gambling.
He stopped playing baseball 4 years before I was born. So I've never known him as the baseball player. Right. I knew he was a baseball player. I knew that I was told he was Charlie Hustle and the Hit King and all that kind of stuff. Never saw it for myself. The only thing I knew as I became a more mature sports fan was that he got in trouble for gambling.
Right.
Then we get, obviously, The Notebook, and then we get the news, of course, that he gambled as a manager. Like, that's going to be part of his legacy. And for me, that's what I think about when I think of Pete Rose. And I think it's fair in passing that we still point those things out. I know a lot of people want to go straight to the good stuff, but that's part of who he
record,
was. Yeah.
And all the things he accomplished on the field.
Yep. But that's who he was.
Did you... you're an expert in gambling, and you know it's a big part of your life, so I want to ask you this. Is it fair that he's not in? Or do you think that, you know, given what you know about gambling, that, you know, I'm not going to say it happens everywhere or other people do it, but do you think it's not in? Or, and maybe this goes to your thoughts on Bonds as well, all of these things, do you think they should keep them out, or do you think it should be strictly what happened on the field?
No, I mean, I think he should be in, but I think there's a difference, because I see a lot of people going to the, oh, I can't wait to hear about Pete Rose and the gambling on a segment brought to you by DraftKings. If you can't separate those two things, then I don't know what to tell you. He gambled on the game and when he was a manager.
Right.
Yeah, that is a direct conflict of interest that should not be part of it. So, like, do I think that he should be in with some sort of note or asterisks or whatever that notes what he did and why? Yeah, but you can still put him in. And just
still give
tell
the
everybody.
Plaque.
Yes, but just tell everybody in the baseball hall. I've never been there, so I don't know how it's set up, but somehow make it known. Yeah, you also gambled on baseball.
Yeah,
so keep that in mind.
There's each player's bios.
You're right there. Yep.
So you could just put it in the bio. He gambled on baseball as a manager, and, you know,
same thing with Barry Bonds. But I mean, like, look at all these. Look, I mean, we can go down, especially with Bonds. Like, what's a little bit more unfair about that is, like, guys like David Ortiz, who were named in reports and all that kind of stuff. Like, those guys are, like, they all have this history. But it's Bonds who is being kept out. Like, those are things that are unfair. Again, if you want to mention it. But I think the people who are, I think, purposefully ignoring the difference between a segment sponsored by a DraftKings or a FanDuel, while also invoking the memory of Pete Rose and saying, why isn't he in today's day and age? I think you're purposely ignoring how those two things are very, very different.
Very, very different. Okay.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Dikembe Mutombo, Hall of Famer, finger-wagging center who spent much of his post-basketball career as an ambassador for the sport, has died of brain cancer at 58, the NBA announced Monday. I really want to get your thoughts on this, NBA expert, in terms of what his... We know about being ambassador. People, I mean, the outpouring of love for him yesterday was amazing on every turn, every tweet, everyone coming. You know, it was NBA media day, the amount of people who, you know, talked about him and his impact after basketball. What was his impact during basketball?
Well, I mean, he's obviously a great defensive player. You're talking about a shot blocker. Some people thought he was the best defensive player that they've ever seen. He was obviously part of that Nuggets team, right? That upended, was the first 8 seed to win over a 1 seed in the first round. Like, that was the first time we saw that. And that was a best-of-5 series, but still was part of it. So I think that's what you're thinking of. I mean, what we're talking about, over 3,000 blocks, 20th, and I think in rebounds right now. So that's defense and rebounding. I think that's what you are, but... It's kind of weird because, in a way, I think that belittles who he is, considering, like you said, the first things about him, and I don't think this says anything about his career, I think it says more about him, you hear about his impact off the court and what
he was
doing.
Right, yesterday it was more about him being ambassador.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a Joel Embiid, it was a really good quote. He said, it's a sad day, especially for us Africans and the whole world, because other than what he's accomplished on the basketball court, he was even better off the court.
Right.
And the impact he had in those communities and whatnot, and, I mean, that's kind of cool. To be such a great basketball player, but for the first thought still to be like, oh, no, he was a great basketball player, maybe one of the best we've seen, but he was even better in terms of what he did for his communities. Like, that to me, I think, is bigger than what he did on the court.
Valid question, for sure.
Rex Ryan says the Cowboys were too cheap to hire him. What a shock. I could have fixed that defense in a New York minute, Rex Ryan told ESPN Radio via USA Today, but that being said, they couldn't pony up the money or I would have been there. Danny? It's our team. Was Jerry cheap? Or was this all the money for Dak?
Do you even want Rex Ryan?
I don't know. I mean, at this point, that defense is looking a little rough after last week, but I don't know how much Zimmer's getting paid or how much Rex Ryan would have gotten paid.
We talked about they were solid last week. On Thursday, they were awesome.
Were they?
They held the Giants under 5 yards per play.
Made Daniel Jones look like a Pro Bowler.
What are you talking about?
Didn't he pass for like 280?
Yeah. He also threw an interception, and they only averaged 4.7 yards per play.
Yeah, but that interception was with three seconds left in the game.
They averaged 1.1 yards per carry on the ground.
Okay.
Like, what are you talking about? That's huge.
Yeah, the run
defense.
The run defense was good. The pass defense did not look good last week.
They held them 15 points.
No, I understand that. I think that's more
of their biggest weakness was their running game, their run defense, and they turned it around completely. Completely snuffed out the Giants' run defense.
Yeah, that's one game, but then their pass defense was pretty bad between the 20s.
I think you're underselling that defensive effort, my friend.
I think that's more Daniel Jones in the red zone, can't get it in the end zone.
Wasn't it Rex Ryan when he got fired said, "I'll be hired in a minute"? He keeps saying he'll be hired in a minute.
Oh, it's a New York minute.
Is that supposed to be a long time or a short time?
I don't know.
Is that a different minute than the other parts of the country?
I think there's a reason he's still an analyst.
I know. I think he has said that three times now. Yeah. And yet he's never been hired.
Right. I'd have fixed it. Like, then why hasn't anybody asked you to do
it? And I don't know. I mean, Jerry, yeah, he got Dak his money, but I think Jerry, if he thought that this guy would really fix a defense, I mean, what was Rex Ryan demanding as an assistant coach that you couldn't afford him? I mean, was he just
probably too much for a guy who's been an analyst for like the last, 5 years now or something like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
he's been out of the game for probably a little too long.
Yeah. I kick down the door and be like, "You need me."
Yes, exactly. Who are you?
Where have you
Who
been?
Are you?
I understand the question.
So we're getting back to Ohtani, and this was interesting. Did you see the night he hit the 50th?
I saw the highlights.
Yeah,
I wasn't watching live.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, 18-year-old named Max Matus claims he grabbed Ohtani's home run ball first, but an older man pinned his arms down and forcefully pulled the ball out of his hands.
I loved this video, by the way. It was great.
Okay. Did you see that?
I saw it. Yeah. I watched it like 20 times. It was hilarious.
So he pinned the kid and just grabbed it?
No, I don't think so. So I'll pull the
18-year-old can't hold on to that ball?
Well, that's the thing. So. I'm going to pull this video up again because from what I remember, he did not catch the ball. The ball fell into the stands, and there was a dog pile for the ball. But he never once had full control in the video that I saw, and the guy came up with it. Like, it's a mad scramble.
Right.
And the funny part about the video is the kid clearly, like, asks for the ball, and the guy's like, no. What do you mean, no? I'm not going to give
this
to you.
It's the 50th ball.
I don't know. I'm going to pull this video up again because I do not remember a point where he was actually in. The kid stuck out in the video because of the pathetic attempt afterward. He was whining about not having it and asked for it multiple times in the video.
So, what's his evidence? He's gonna bring the judge the video?
I would assume.
And you can't really see anything because, like John said, there was a huge dog pile, and if I remember correctly, it was under a table.
There was like a row of tables
in front of the stands.
The ball is now up for auction at an auction house. A judge has ruled that the ball can't be sold before October 10th. The auction house had been planning to put the ball up for auction with October 16th as the final day for bidding. This kid can't win this.
No, there's no way. What lawyer says, yeah, we'll do it?
Yeah, exactly, lawyer.
I mean, I guess you get paid. Maybe he's just charging. He's like, I'm going to get some fees out of this, whatever, but we're probably going to lose.
I wonder how much this is worth.
I thought I saw it was a couple million.
Oh, it's got to be a lot, yeah.
Really?
And good for them, by the way, for not doing the thing where, did you read that story about your terrible Dodgers franchise? A few months back
with
about
the
couple. Yeah, and
the woman.
Yep. And how they offered her like a bag of baseballs and a thing of chips. And they were like, yep, get out of here.
Yeah.
Or else we're not letting you out. And like they were detaining her.
Yes.
Good for him walking out of that.
Yes.
Taking the ball and saying, no, I'm selling this thing.
Right.
Get out of here.
I don't want a bat. I don't want to meet him.
Yep. No.
I don't want another
10-second conversation about him.
Yeah. And he's not going to speak English.
Right. He's going to
take the interpreter.
Of course.
The interpreter's going to have to interpret what you're saying.
Yep. No way. Good for them.
Couple million bucks.
So according to this USA Today article, the ball has already received two bids with the highest of just over 700,000.
still get $700,000. I'd take it from an 18-year-old for $700,000, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yes, we're trying to find this.
Okay,
this video.
I had thought in the beginning that the kid caught it. I thought he caught it, and then the guy just forcefully pinned him down and grabbed the ball from him.
Yeah, no. See, okay, I'm watching the video. It's the same video. So he never actually, the guy who recovers the ball is on the ground under the table going for the ball. I'm showing this to you right now. The kid is in question is in the red jersey right here. He's just bent over trying to grab at it. At no point does he have possession of it.
He can't win that.
Yeah.
I thought he caught it. I thought he had he had like a glove and he caught the ball.
No, never did.
And then someone stole it from him.
Here, I'll play this for you. I'm gonna turn my mic. So that watch, he goes in, everybody dogpiles for it. Look, he never goes on the ground. There's somebody under the table already. He never has possession of it. What is he suing for?
No, he can't. He can't win this.
And if I remember correctly, the day after that, he was actually
interviewed. He's still reaching for it underneath the table.
Right. He was actually interviewed after the game, and there was an article the next day.
Look at him. He's complaining. Watch. Look, you see him?
Oh, no. Did you see him? He put his hands up in the air.
Yeah.
Like someone did something wrong to him.
Yep. Oh, look at him. He's reaching for the ball. He wants it. There's no way he's winning this.
No, he can't.
What were you saying, Danny?
So apparently that was the kid's 18th birthday that day that it happened.
Well, too bad.
And I was reading the article the next day.
Welcome to adulthood, buddy.
I was reading the article the next day. Supposedly, according to him, the guy like put his arm between his thighs and just ripped the ball out of his hand. That's the story that he told.
I mean, it's a scrum.
Go get it.
It's a scrum. You know what happens at the bottom of piles in the NFL?
That's the more interesting thing is, like, legally, does anything come of this when it comes to, like, how you handle business during a scrum like that during baseball games?
No rules.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Because that's always just, it's madness. And we see it all the time. We see people land on old ladies for foul balls.
Yes.
It's absolute anarchy. And so for something like this, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was like eye pokes at the bottom of the pile and
for his 50th home run.
Yep. Yeah, there's some dirty stuff. They opened the bidding at $500,000.
Good for that guy.
Yeah,
get $700,000 if someone's going to pay me $700,000 for that ball.
Hell yeah!
Oh, he'll get over $1 million.
Call up the Dodgers. You guys want it? What time do you want it? Let's go.
Yeah. This is the opening bid.
That's right.
This is my opening bid.
Come on, give me some of that gambling money.
Ohtani can afford it. Yeah. I don't know if he would. I don't know if Ohtani would pay a dime for it. What do you think?
I feel like he's such a competitive psychopath. He'd be like, I'm going to hit another 50 next year.
Yeah, exactly. He's a nut job.
Yep.
Do you think the league would let is a weird way to phrase it, but do you think they would let him have it or would they want that in the Hall of Fame?
I mean, you can't not let anybody have it, right?
Right.
There's no legal right to keeping the ball.
No, but the league would approach him and be like, hey, I know it's your 50th, but we want it in the Hall of Fame.
You're talking about approaching Ohtani?
Yeah. Like
Ohtani
if he got the ball back somehow.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Who knows?
They'd want it in the Hall of Fame, but if I'm Ohtani, I don't have to give it up.
Well, you got your hands on it first, too.
That's true. That's true. All right, when we come back, more NFL. Jared Goff, a perfect night.
That is Monday Night Magic.
You're listening to The Press Box on 100.9 FM and 1100 AM, featuring John Von Tobel.
Monday Night Madness, some magic from Ben Johnson, yeah. Oh, look, you're pumping. You must have had the Lions.
Oh, yeah. That was a good.
I can always tell your response.
Amon Ross saying, that was a nice pass.
That was a nice pass.
That was
nice
exactly
catch.
Where it needed
perfect
to be.
Perfect pass.
For a vast majority of the night, Jared Goff had more receiving yards than Tyreek Hill.
Wow. That tells you about the offense you're talking about when Tua's not there.
Right.
You know?
That was bad.
Jared Goff went 18 of 18, and he didn't get the game ball. Did you see Dan Campbell afterwards?
No.
He goes, I didn't realize that I gave it to the wrong guy. I don't know who he gave it to, but he didn't give Jared Goff the game ball after having a perfect.
I mean, I'll tell you what. You don't give the game ball to that defense. They were giving up big play after big play. That was pretty bad for a good stretch. It looked like every time the Lions were going to start pulling away, it's just like, we'll give up a big chunk, a big run to Kenneth Walker or a big play downfield, and all of a sudden we're going to be right there in position to score if you're the Seahawks.
Were you more a believer before or after in the Seahawks?
Before.
Or were you a believer in them at all?
No, I'm a believer in the sense that I think that they're like a playoff team. And I think defensively they are going to be pretty good for the most part. I thought yesterday It was just a matchup problem because George Fant's on IR, and without him, I mean, that offensive line looks pretty bad. Geno Smith is under pressure. I mean, I haven't looked at the official pressure numbers from last night yet. I'll pull them up now. But the game against the Dolphins previous week, he was under pressure on over 40% of his dropbacks. It looked like yesterday he was getting moved off of his spot a ton. We haven't, the pressure numbers aren't updated yet, but like he was getting moved off of his spot a ton in right. that game too. And I think that's going to be a problem for him until Fant comes back and that he's healthy. And then once they're back, like I like Mike McDonald a lot. I think he's going to scheme that defense up and they're going to be pretty effective. Geno Smith's super underrated. What he's right. done for that team since he's been there.
Oh, since he's
yes.
come back. Yes.
Yes, he has been brilliant. So if that offensive line gets fixed and he's not going to be under pressure as often, no, they're going to be like a legitimate playoff team.
And is this the real Detroit Lions?
I think it is. I think they're a highly skilled offensive team. And remember, they didn't have Frank Ragnow in that game either, so like that's kind of a big deal. Right. Their offensive line's going to get better. But last year, they were a below-average secondary. And again, they kind of look like it again this year. So that's... Like, I believed in the Lions to an extent, but there was a lot of, like, full-on, like, this is the best team in the NFC. But my question was, you signed a bunch of guys and you drafted two dudes in the draft to fix your defense. Are you really going to rely on two rookies and a bunch of new pieces, like, from in terms of free agency that are really right. going to turn this thing around? And I don't – it seems to really not be the case. And they're just kind of the same team from last year, which is very good. I mean, what were they up on the 49ers in the NFC Championship game? Were they up by 9 or 10
yeah,
or something
up,
like that?
Yeah, they're up to double digits, yep. I thought.
They're still very good and can win the NFC, but the degree to which I like a lot of people thought they were that good, I had questions, and I still think those are fair questions to ask.
Blessing in disguise that Will Levis got hurt.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Mason Rudolph.
I mean, I feel
great,
bad.
But...
I didn't feel bad. I mean, I feel bad. I don't want guys to get hurt, but he's another pick.
He's not good.
No, he's not good at all.
Because like the picks are they're catastrophic.
Yeah,
he's
either pick sixes or he's thrown behind himself. I mean, it's amazing that they say if he's healthy, he's still our guy. But it's Mason Rudolph.
But again, the interception, like last night, he's looking at the defender standing in, and it's a fat guy. It's not right. even like it's not like a corner made like a really good play on the ball. He's staring directly at, I think it was a defensive lineman who dropped back into coverage. He's staring at him, and he decides to throw the ball anyway. It's so bad.
Mason Rudolph wasn't great.
No.
It's Mason Rudolph.
I mean, it is. Look, quarterbacks aren't easy to find, but you look at Miami, you look at Tennessee, you look at some of these teams, and you wonder, why do you go into the season with the backup situation that you have?
Right.
It's not great to find quarterbacks, but for example, like I'm a Colts guy, and I honestly think that what happened with the Browns last year with Joe Flacco is way overblown. I thought Stefanski, if you really watch what they did, they were playing the equivalent of three-point shooting teams in basketball, which was they were playing the variants. They were just taking shots downfield the entire time, and it was one of three outcomes. It was incomplete, it was a big play, or it was an interception.
Off.
Exactly. And if you get picked off, oh, well, arm punt, we'll live to play another
right,
day. We
punt.
Have an awesome
exactly.
defense,
exactly.
and that's going to help us. They played that variance really well. And ultimately, we saw what happened in the playoffs. They got smoked because that variance went the other way in a really big fashion. But Joe Flacco is still a very serviceable backup to have behind a guy like Anthony Richardson, who you know can be
right.
oft injured, and again,
right.
last week, gets knocked
what
out.
Happened?
That's a smart thing. What are these other teams doing with their backup quarterback positions? It's a nightmare. Like, Mason Rudolph's not great. Miami, how do you go through camp and preseason and go, Skylar Thompson? That's going to be the guy behind our guy who has missed a ton of time due to injury. That's who we're going to trust to be our backup. And now all of a sudden you have to ask Snoop Huntley to come in, and he was awful. I don't know what these teams do.
I'm not going on a limb, but I don't think the Raiders have the worst backup quarterback in the league.
No, I don't think so. I think that's totally fair. Like, at least Aiden O'Connell will just give you, like, just a baseline of okay.
Right.
And he's not – because the one thing that I was making the case for him when Tyler and I were talking when you were out of camp during the summer and whatnot was – look, at the very least, the one thing it seemed that he did pretty well was he didn't put the ball in danger. Didn't commit a ton of turnover-worthy plays.
No, he didn't.
It was just a bunch of bland.
Doesn't make a huge play.
Yep, but it was bland. It was whatever. He'll, I guess, keep you on track, although it was a very short track. But he wasn't going to commit the catastrophic play like a Will Levis or anything
right.
like that. And so that's at least a positive. No, I think you're absolutely right. Like, it's not the worst thing in the world to have Favre back there.
Joe Flacco came in for your Colts and went 3-for-4 71.
Yeah, threw a touchdown, too.
I don't know. It's just I give Joe Flacco credit. He's still around. And he still makes plays.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, no, I think he's a good backup. I think, like, obviously I think the Colts want Richardson to be healthy so they could just continue to develop him. And the spectrum is like I'm holding my hands very far apart, but like Richardson's like this, right? Like the low is really low, but the high is really high. Flacco's kind of like this.
Where he's in the middle.
Yeah, he's in the middle, definitely, especially when you're talking about comparing it to Anthony Richardson. But there's less explosive. I think there's less explosivity with Flacco there. And like I don't know how much you watched that game because I know obviously you're busy, but they held on to dear life in that game. They built up a 17-0 lead, and then they just prayed that they could hold on to it.
The clock would run out.
Because their defense stunk, and they really didn't do much afterward, and they were just holding on desperately to potentially win that game. Maybe it's better if Flacco has to start and he's preparing all week, but you have to be able to score because your defense is not good, and they were just lucky that there just wasn't enough time. Like, if there was an extra 5 minutes in that game, I think the Steelers would probably win that day.
Are you worried about Richardson?
No, I'm not really, just because I think he's young, you know?
He just really more the injuries.
Start. Yeah, that's I think the thing that worries
that's
you.
That's the thing that worries you.
And I think the report was during the game that he, so if you remember the sequence, he goes, he gets hurt, he gets out of the game, he actually comes back in, runs another play, but then leaves again. And even on that play, he kind of gave himself
right,
up.
Right, right.
It sounded like, from all indications, that he was actually personally ready to go back in the game for the second time. Like he was going to be good the rest of the way. But they were up 17-0, and they said, we're good. Like, just stay out. We're up 17-0. We think we can hold on to this. No need to risk it. And they did. They held on to it, and they won. He's only day-to-day. I think he's going to play next week, by all accounts. But, yeah, I think that's the thing you're worried about, because who knows? I mean, look, he could be bad. He could be terrible. But at the very least, the difference between him and, like, a Will Levis is the upside is so much greater.
Well, it's incredibly greater.
And he's still doing the positive things. Like, again, generated explosives against the Steelers. Did it? He's done it throughout even the bad weeks. There's still like one or two big explosive plays downfield, like Alec Pierce or somebody, where you're still getting that. Had a big touchdown or had a big run in the fourth quarter against the Bears, where you're still seeing at least the really big positive upside, where that's kind of what you're holding on to if you're the Colts. You're like, no, we still see that. So right. Former UNLV quarterback Shane Steichen is like, we'll do this.
Right.
We can do
exactly. This. You like Steichen?
I think so. I think he's really smart, man. He's done a great job. By the way, the Eagles miss him.
Yeah. They do.
I mean, like, you see the drop off there.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, we're going to continue with the NFL when we come back, and a little Georgia football with Charles McDonald.
He covers the NFL, but only the Bulldogs can bring him happiness. Yahoo Sports' Charles McDonald joins the show. Follow him on Twitter at @4verts.
All right, Charles, how are you?
We're doing good. How about you?
Yeah, we're okay. We got to get it out of the way. I know you maybe don't want to talk, but we got to get it out of the way. Alabama, Georgia, your thoughts?
Fun game. Yeah. I had a good time with that. I mean, it's September. There's no threat of like being eliminated from the playoffs yet. So, I was really unhappy at first when they were down 28-0 before I could blink. But I never turned it off because, Alabama, they got up so early where I was like, all right, I flat out do not believe that Alabama is 4 touchdowns better than Georgia. We'll see if they can make it a game. And I think once they figured out like some semblance of an identity in the passing game, they were kind of able to just march down the field at will on Alabama. But Ryan Williams, when I was 17, I wasn't doing that. I can promise you that. I was just doing a bunch of degenerate things with my friends for the most part and hampering my own athletic abilities with some of the things we enjoyed to do. But wow, like I can't believe that kid is 17, and he turned 17 this year. You know, like he's not a guy who's about to turn 18. He doesn't turn 18 until after the season's over. So, you know, I think it was just one of those games. But like, I'll be freaking out if they lose to Texas. You know,
yeah,
this one, I kind of just enjoyed this the spectacle of it.
Any worry about the offensive line? What they were down a starter going into the game. I think they lost their center in the matchup. Do you think that's going to be a problem?
Yes, it's going to be a matter against teams like Alabama and Texas and probably Tennessee, because they look like one of those teams that can actually give the Bulldogs some trouble. But I don't think it's in a spot where like you really need to just freak out and spaz just yet. Those guys have played a lot of football. There's a lot of experience from that group. So if Tate can get back in the lineup and some of those other guys can settle in, and honestly, if Mike Bobo can get a handle in the passing game, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, we and Texas will have a lot to do with this, but we were saying on Monday, I'd love to see that game 3 times. Now, I don't know if we will because of Texas and who's going to win, who's going to be in the SEC championship, but I wouldn't mind a rematch in that sometimes in the playoff. I thought that was one of the funnest games I've ever watched.
Yeah, it was. I mean, because I had people hitting me up like, oh, my God, like, you must be heartbroken. I'm like, no, I'm not. That was amazing. Like, I love football before all else, except when it comes to Falcons Saints game. But, like, the spectacle of the sport, because to me, one thing that NIL has actually done to me, at least, is, dude, the top talent is just so concentrated. It's like, it's crazy. And I know that, you know, there are some exceptions where maybe guys will go somewhere else and get a bag or they'll transfer. But for the most part, like, you're looking at 4-5 schools where all the top players are.
Yeah.
And that has kind of become a mini, like, professional league in its own right, where, like, you look at, like, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Tennessee. That's like its own little class of college football talent this year. So, I think it's fascinating just to see kind of the professionalization of the sport. But it does get you moments like that where you're looking at a game like Alabama, Georgia, and you're like, holy crap! Like, there's 30 future pros on this field, and some of them are literal teenagers, 17 years old. So, I thought that was an amazing game. I wasn't mad at it at all. I thought it was really cool.
One of my big takeaways, you tell me if this is fair. I think it is, actually. Kalen DeBoer deserves a ton of credit, but specifically, dude, that guy can do stuff with quarterbacks. Jalen Milroe as a passer looks incredible this year.
Do you guys know what Kalen DeBoer's record is just as a coach overall?
I don't know overall, but he's got an insane record against, what is it, top 25 teams or some of these elite guys, right?
It doesn't matter where you put it. It's insane. Like, overall, if you include all of his coaching stops, including some of the NAIA stuff, through Fresno, through Washington, through Alabama, he is 108-12 lifetime as a head coach. As an FBS head coach, major Division I, so that's Fresno State, Washington, Alabama, I think he's 44-3 as a head coach. He was the offensive coordinator for the only 8-win Indiana team in the last 25 years. So this guy is stamped in a way that I don't think people have fully understood yet. Because dude, when people were like, oh, you know, Saban's gone, they're going to fall off a little bit, I was like, they're hiring a guy who's like basically never lost a game for the most part. And I know that they got down to the game versus Michigan in the playoffs and they lost, but man, like they didn't really have the talent to get there outside of, like, you know, Penix and the receivers, because you see where Washington's at this year.
Yep.
They wouldn't have a prayer to compete with any of the teams at the top now. So I think he's like we should probably look at this like a generational coaching talent. The guy just flat out doesn't lose, and now he has access to the resources that Alabama has. So, you know, as a Georgia fan, I think this weekend where you guys – I don't know if you guys remember this, but in 2016 when the Falcons beat the Seahawks in the division round of playoffs, there's this gif of Pete Carroll just kind of like accepting that, yeah, our time at the top of the NFC might be over. There's some competition here. That's kind of how I was looking at it with the board that went. I was like, okay, you're stamped. I'm here. I think it'll be fun when they're not playing my team, because that offense is insane and they're doing a crazy job over there.
Your other team, the Falcons, gets the win over the Saints. What did you see? What were you happy about there?
Thank God for Youngway and the defense and special teams, because once again the Falcons did not score a touchdown. Like, I feel like it's falling under the radar because they're 2-2, but their offense is garbage right now. Like, it's just as bad as it was last year. Which is not a good thing to say when you have paid Kirk Cousins all that money. I think the Zach Robinson OC thing, it's not really working out to me. I think you get a little bit too far away from like the McVay Shanahan brand, and you're all like fourth generation guys, and maybe it's not actually meant to be. You don't just inhale the same air as Sean or Kyle, and you understand how to run an NFL offense. So. I think they have a long ways to go on offense, but the defense, I will say, is playing better than they were, or better than I expected them to. And you got lucky with the punt muff returned in the end zone, and you win. But like you do, even the last drive, I don't know if Kirk completed more than like two passes, but you had the you had the brain dead pass interference by Paulson Szabo that got them in the field goal range. Well, quote unquote field goal range, because they still had four more plays, four straight incompletions, and then Youngway saved them with the 58-yard field goal to ice it. So the offense is very concerning, and I think more people will realize that when they play again on national TV on Thursday.
You think it's time to go to former Kalen DeBoer quarterback Michael Penix Jr.?
No, I don't think they will. Too expensive. This is what they did to themselves, right?
Yep.
Like, you didn't give yourself any leeway if Kirk struggles, or like if we just had a veteran quarterback that struggled. You say, all right, we'll just pull him and put the rookie in and see what happens. No, that's not happening here. And the frustrating thing to me is the offensive line. The pass pro has been pretty good. It's been good for the most part, outside of week one, where T.J. Watt was just teeing off on them. The pass rush has been, or the pass blocking has been pretty good. So that's a little concerning that, like, we still can't generate stuff from clean pockets. But, hey, we beat that nasty, nasty team in New Orleans, and evil has been vanquished for another weekend.
We asked this before you came on about the Lions last night. Is this the real Lions? Is this the team that can win the NFC?
I mean, you got to put a grain of salt on that, because the Seahawks were literally missing their entire starting defensive line, you know? So, like, coming to the game, I was like, are the Lions going to put up 50? Because that's the best offensive line and probably the best running game in the league versus a team that is literally missing their entire defensive line. So I wasn't really surprised they got stampeded, but, like, that's going to be their path to success, right? You got to run the ball. You got to be able to play action. And when you can do both of those things, they're really hard to stop. They don't really play that well to me when they have to get, like, behind the sticks and they're playing catch-up. But that's the type of game where they can really take control. They can get out of hand, because you have just an overwhelming offensive line against literal backups at every single position on the Seahawks' defensive line. So I was surprised that they stampeded them. But I still think if you're Seattle, you got to show a little more pride than that, man. Like, you can't just get blown off the ball every single play. You got Jahmyr Gibbs with – you know, a highway in front of him as he's walking down the field. It's not really a good situation for them right now.
Should we be cooking Mike McDaniel more for this putrid offense?
Yes, absolutely. You have Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Devin Achan. I don't really think that there's a reason for the offense to look this bad. It doesn't make any sense to me. I know that, you know, Skylar Thompson is a big, big drop down from even, like, your typical backup quarterback. Like, Tyler Huntley's okay. Like, even to me, I know he's a Pro Bowler, but just an okay backup quarterback. We're going to be real about it. So they have to be more creative. And I thought that this was a more creative offense, more creative play caller. But I think we're finding out it's kind of just a selection of, like, money Madden plays. Like, you go to YouTube and you type in, like, how to beat someone online. Like, that's the kind of offense that the Dolphins have been running, which is fine. Like, if you can get the ball out fast on time, but at some point, you just need a more cohesive plan where you're setting things up and trying to break them instead of just, you know, sorting by, like, success rate and just like, ooh, I'll call that play. You know, mm-hmm. I scored a touchdown against my cousin there. Let's run it back.
How much worse does he look, too, with what LaFleur did with Willis in those 2 weeks?
I think he did a good job of not letting him mess up the game. But there's also been a shift in how well Malik has played. Like, sure. When you look at I think when you look at some of the comments Malik had last week or the week before, where after his first start, someone asked him, like, what's the difference? And he was like, basically, like, well, I got to practice, you know? He was like, I got to practice with the first team. I never, ever got to do that in Tennessee. So, you know, practicing with my teammates before we played was kind of a big deal for me. Like, wow, that's fair. Makes a whole lot of sense. But, you know, I do think it just goes to show that like we've seen with some of these other young quarterbacks, not always just written free after the first stop. Sometimes you can keep going and find somewhere else to go. And I think that Malik at least has found a home where he can be a backup for a few years in Green Bay, which honestly didn't really look possible this time last year.
Well, he is Charles McDonald from Yahoo Sports. Does a great job with us every week explaining Georgia football, Atlanta Falcons football, and everything else, college and NFL. Thanks, Charles. We appreciate the time as usual.
Thanks.
Take care. Charles McDonald there from Yahoo Sports. Follow him on Twitter at 4verts, capital V. All right, we've got some giveaways now. First of two tickets to Iron Maiden, Saturday night, October 5th at Michelob Ultra Arena. Tickets at AXS.com. But right now you can get two tickets to Iron Maiden, 702-364-1100, 702-364-1100. Caller number 5 gets the tickets.
For me, it was just trusting my technique on the play and trusting the route. And after that, it was just instincts, to be honest. And I mean, like I said, all glory to God on that one.
You're on the elevator up to the press box with Graney and Bischoff, featuring John Von Tobel.
Callie Finn is going to join us at 9 to talk Aces from the Review Journal. It's Callie Finn now, married. Congratulations. We'll congratulate her at 9 o'clock. And Ryan Wallace with the VGK update will be with us at 9:30. 9:15, stay tuned for this. Going to ask JVT a lot of NBA questions. Who's going to win the title? What can hold someone back? Surprise team of the season, all this stuff that JVT is going to talk to us about. The NBA media days were yesterday.
Training camp starts today.
It's real quick before we get to that, though, is media day usually this big a deal? Have I missed things in the previous years?
I think so. Like, usually,
because I saw updates on like everyone yesterday. Yeah.
Because they all report kind of at once, so you kind of get everything. Like, I usually, on these days, I was busy yesterday, but yeah, if you watch like NBA TV, generally they'll just have media day.
They just
like,
go from day to day, or team to team to team.
Yeah, all day. You'll just have different reports and everything like that. So
I saw LeBron with Bronny sitting up there at the...
So weird, dude.
It's very strange watching them answer questions.
That is just... I never want to... You kind of know how you got there. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So it's always interesting. I hope the kid's really good. I hope so.
Well, there'll be people rooting against him because people
correct.
Root against people.
And that's always going to be a topic of conversation. So I very much hope he is going to be successful so then he can kind of quell some of the, you got the job because of your dad. But that's kind of weird.
I thought it was strange watching him. Yeah. But whatever. I mean, I hope, I'm with you. I hope he's good.
Yes.
I don't know if he'll be good.
I don't
think he's going to be good, but we hope he is. Conference realignment. So updates this morning. This was interesting. Let's start with Gonzaga because everyone for the last week said maybe Gonzaga to the Pac-12. You get that basketball program in there. It's a non-football playing school, but it's Gonzaga, so it brings all this cachet. Mm-hmm. They've announced that Gonzaga to the Pac-12. What are your thoughts on this? Because I think it obviously immediately makes it a better basketball conference. Although it wasn't a horrible basketball conference with San Diego State and Boise, and I don't know how Oregon State and Washington State is going to be in the future without being, you know, with the other Pac-12 schools. Washington State had some good years with Kyle Smith as their coach.
Yeah, you know, Fresno State's not going to be any good.
No, Fresno State's not going to be any good.
They're putrid.
Utah State's usually okay.
Yep.
They're usually a bubble team.
Yep.
But good move for Gonzaga?
I think so. I mean, especially like you said, from a basketball standpoint. Now, they don't count as a full-time member, even though they're bringing all – it's going to be all sports in the Pac-12.
Right.
But obviously they don't have football, so it's not a full-time member. But I think from a basketball standpoint, it's going to be great. I mean, now you actually have a little bit of parity at the top for this league. Like you said, it looked like maybe it's going to be kind of top-heavy, and it still is going to be. But at the very least, it looks like you're going to have some pretty good teams. Like, dude, we were talking about this off the air. Watching San Diego State and Gonzaga go at it twice a year, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. That's going to be awesome. So I like it, and I think you should, when you talk about these additions, asking – oh, we forgot two, right? Colorado State, that's generally a pretty decent program.
Okay, that's
a
pretty decent program with Nico Medved.
I think you should – football is going to run everything, and that should be a vast majority of your decision-making. But you should also have the consideration of what does it look like for basketball, your second biggest money generator. And to add something like Gonzaga, I think is very good for the conference.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Big 12, right? Big 12 football-wise is like, whatever, they're okay.
But
basketball-wise, it's
going to
be
amazing.
Great. Yeah, it's going to be
amazing.
Awesome. Yep.
Another update, it appears in the reports out there that UTEP is close to joining the Mountain West. We had heard about Texas State getting a verbal offer. Obviously, they want to get into Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind UTEP. I don't mind Texas State.
Well, I think Texas State is it too much to call it the big fish? But like, I kind of feel like it is. By all accounts, they're like really investing in this football program. Like, they want this to be better. They want to be a good football program, top tier, and having a program that is really dedicated to do something like that into the Mountain West, I think would be massive.
Right.
Like, they could be one of the better football programs in the conference, the way that looks and the way they're investing in it. I think it's absolutely a home run.
Texas El Paso?
Yeah, I think, like you said, like getting into the state of Texas is big for the conference. Having two Texas teams out there and kind of just staying in that really kind of bubble, right, in terms of the Mountain West and where you're at geographically, I think it makes a ton of sense to add a team like Texas El Paso. Now, what's the other one? What the rumor today? Tarleton?
Tarleton State.
Yeah.
FCS that's going to make the jump.
I believe also in Texas, correct?
Yes.
So,
are they in Texas too? I can't tell you what Tarleton. I don't know much about Tarleton State.
Yeah.
Can't even pronounce it.
Tarleton. It's Tarleton. An interesting, you know, leap up if that's going to be the case. But, again, I guess you're just looking at
more,
bodies.
I thought they were thinking more North Dakota.
Yeah.
I thought they were thinking more North Dakota, but boy, do you want to go there during winter for a basketball game?
God, that would suck.
Oh, man. That would stink.
Yes.
That would really stink.
I'm trying to think, what is the geography like now? In the new Mountain West, what's like the big winter cities that you would go to? Reno?
Wyoming.
Laramie. You can get some weather at Air Force.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Okay. Air Force still there.
Air Force. Not San Jose. Not here.
The biggest would be Wyoming.
Yeah.
Be Laramie in the winter. Yeah. But they've done that for years.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm trying to think. So.
That's kind of a North Dakota style. Yeah, they've got to get to eight teams to be a conference and
eight full-time teams
because Hawaii's not full-time. And I agree with you. I think getting into the – I mean, it's funny because, like, Colorado State goes to the Pac-12 and says, well, we have the Denver market. I don't know if they have the Denver market.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if they have – they say they do.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, UTEP and Texas State, it's good to get into Texas –
how much of
the Texas teams there? I don't know how much you're there. I don't know how much you have those markets.
I mean, I'll say I think UNLV did a pretty good job. I mean, if you're going to get the money from this whole move from the Mountain West teams to the Pac-12 to potentially pay Barry Odom to work in the clause that you could leave for a Power Four offer, I think you played it pretty well.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you got a good payday, and that was the you talked about it off the air, and you just said that was the most important thing to me is the clause that if a Power Four comes, you can go to the Power Four. You needed that clause in there. You needed the ability to get out without, you know, costing you a fortune.
Yep. And you see all these, like, the talking heads on Twitter questioning, criticizing, like, oh, I don't know. Like, now, Pac-12's not all it's cracked up to be. It's just a logo, and this thing's pretty good for UNLV the way it's set up.
It's not going to be the Pac-12 of old.